Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones for the week of April 12th, 2011. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo, on Twitter at AzevedoJ. Who's with me this evening?
Kent Wilson from Flames Nation, The Score, and Hockey Perspectives at Kent_Wilson.
Excellent. So it's just the Godfather and I. So we'll move into our first segment.
The Smoke.
So two games in the past week for the Flames. A game against Edmonton, 6-1 drubbing of the Dirty Oilers from up north. And a 3-2 loss in overtime against the Vancouver Canucks, the President's Trophy winners. Do you have anything to say about those games?
No, not really. They sort of went as you would expect. I mean, they beat up on the Oilers, which they should have. The Oilers are terrible. I mean, the Oilers fully healthy are terrible. The Oilers not fully healthy are an AHL team, and probably not a very good one. So the Flames actually struggled with them previous game, I thought, and that was actually a pretty terrible game by the Flames. But they killed them that time. I mean, in Vancouver, I thought they outplayed the Canucks in the first two periods, not by a huge margin, but enough to be ahead. But Canucks just turned it around third and overwhelmed them because Canucks are a better team. So.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I just find it encouraging that the Flames, I mean, they pretty much knew that their season was over 40 minutes in the Edmonton game, and, you know, they still came out in the third period and just destroyed the Oilers. Like, there wasn't any letdown, really, in terms of pace of the play. It's just something, having that news broken to you, I would expect a little bit more of a kind of relaxed effort in the last period, but they didn't do that, and they went right after it, and Iggy got his third goal in the third and 42nd, I think, overall in the season.
That's
so.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, good for him. And the Vancouver game, I mean, it went as expected. The Vancouver Canucks are the best team in the league, and they were playing most of their starters, if not all of them.
All of them.
I mean, the Flames, obviously not a playoff team. You would expect that the Canucks would take advantage of that and be able to beat them. So, as expected, those are the two final games for the Flames, obviously, this season. And I guess respectable record of 41-29-12. But what you don't see there is the amount of games they won in a shootout, and I think it was 8 by the...
I think it was 9, actually, by the end.
Yeah. By the end of the season. Yep. So, skills competition obviously helped them out a little bit, but not enough to get into the playoffs, even though they did have 94 points, and I believe 94 points last year would have gotten them in.
Would have been close, yeah.
Not good enough this year, no. So they're out. So I guess we'll move on to our middle segment.
The Bonfire.
So Kent and I are just going to go over the playoff series this year for the NHL, and, you know, who we predict is going to win each series and some reasons why we think each one team is better than the other or why one team will lose or not. But we'll start off in the West here. The number one seed Vancouver Canucks against the number 8 seed Chicago Blackhawks. Chicago, the past couple of years running, knocked Vancouver out. Dustin Byfuglien and Patty Kane, big parts of that last year. Obviously, Byfuglien not there this year, but Kane with his disgusting mullet still there.
I fully expect Vancouver to win. I think a lot of people do. The Hawks aren't the same team they were last year. Obviously, they lost a lot of people because of the cap concerns. I think, the Hawks are still a very good team. And they could very well beat Vancouver because, I mean, they're not a true 8th seed in my eyes. They had a really good goal differential this year. They had really good underlying numbers. Their last couple of weeks, they weren't very good. Part of that was losing Sharp, I think, losing Boland, who was a shutdown centerman. So, I mean, if they carry that kind of play into the postseason, it's going to be a short series. But, I mean, if they play to their potential, it could go 7 games for sure.
Have there been any updates on Sharp or Boland? Because I know Boland is their shutdown third line guy.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard about Boland recently. I know Sharp was close at the end of the regular season. It wouldn't surprise me if they sort of rush him back into the lineup. But Boland, I'm not so sure.
I agree in that the Hawks aren't that true number 8 seed. They definitely are a better team than that. But Vancouver this year, they're just too good.
There's no weaknesses there.
No, I'm just not going to. I mean, like we were talking about this, I guess, in the Flames Nation live chat in the last game of the season. And you take a look at Vancouver's top 6 D. You got Ballard, you got Ham Hughes, Bieksa, Edler, Salo, and whatever the fuck the other guy is, but like,
yeah, it's solid stem to stern. I mean, like, and they missed Edler all year, and he's the best defenseman on the team.
Yeah, like the sixth defenseman on the Canucks would be the fourth defenseman on the Flames, maybe even third defenseman. Like, they're just fucking ridiculously deep.
Yeah,
and I'm not gonna be picking against the Canucks at least in the first round. So
no,
I'm thinking Canucks probably in 6. I do think that Chicago will give them a little bit.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Not enough to take the series.
No.
So what are you saying Canucks in 6 as well? Or
I'll say 7. How about that?
Okay. So second series in the West, the San Jose Sharks take on the LA Kings, a battle of California, as the Ducks are in the playoffs as well. But San Jose a bit stronger in the second half of the season. They seem to be struggling the first half, but I'm not sure what clicked. But they did come on pretty hard the last 45 or so games and were able to clinch that second spot. But the Kings also having a pretty good goal differential, maybe a little bit better than the 7 seed. I would probably rather play Phoenix than the Kings, but with Anze Kopitar out now and, you know, Quick.
Justin Williams hurt.
Yeah, and Quick not really having a reliable playoff experience before. I'm not totally sold on the Kings at this point.
I'm not either, actually. I mean, I counted a couple games with the Kings this year, obviously scoring chances, and one thing that really stuck out to me was they prevented a lot of chances, but they didn't really generate a lot either. I mean, they actually spent the last game against the Flames, they spent a lot of time in the offensive zone, but shallow end, lots of point shots, just nothing in terms of real generating real quality chances. And then one of the Oilers bloggers was actually tracking the Kings for the last couple of weeks after that trade, the Penner trade. And yeah, they were outchanced most of the time. So they're I think they should be better than they are, but San Jose is going to wipe the floor with them.
So Drew Doughty has been, you know, talked about as kind of regressing a little bit this season. Is that is that true in the case of the underlying numbers? Or is that just more counting numbers that has appeared?
I saw one of the Kings bloggers went through it piece by piece a couple of weeks ago, and I don't remember the specifics just because I read the piece a while ago, but it was mainly just counting numbers. I mean, he's still, you know, facing top end competition. He still has strong underlying numbers. It was something like his power play numbers had dropped, and the Kings don't think they have a very good power play this year. And it was just one of those things where that was the anchor dragging down his numbers. Everything else is solid. So he's still a good player.
So is there a specific reason you think the Kings have struggled as much as they have this year? Because last year, I think they were the 5 seed, right? And just this year, they haven't, like, as you said, they haven't been generating those scoring chances as often as they were last year. Is there something that's happened with the coaching or personnel change in there that's attributed to that?
I'm not really certain because, I mean, if you look at that top six, that's a good team. I mean, Kopitar, when he's healthy, Williams is good. Dustin Penner, adding him, I mean, he's a solid player. You have, Simmons, I like. I like, you know, that top nine, in fact. But just watching the games, they couldn't get the puck into the center of the ice. I mean, they were good along the boards. They were good at forcing it north, but they couldn't do anything with it on their sticks. It was similar to a lot of the Calgary teams we've seen the last couple of years, they're pretty good in terms of the fundamentals, but creativity wasn't there. They couldn't make cross-ice passes. Just one of those things.
So I'm going to say San Jose in five. I hesitate against picking sweeps just because...
Yeah, nobody likes to pick sweeps.
Exactly. So San Jose in five. I think LA will win one at home.
I'll agree with that. On San Jose, the funny thing is, through the first half of the season, they struggled, right? They had... And I looked at it at one point because Elliot Friedman had one of his things in his 30 Thoughts blog. It was talking about an Olympics hangover for... for a bunch of the Sharks players, and I thought, that sounds pretty silly to me. One, because it wasn't only Sharks players who went to the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
So I looked at their numbers, and it was all percentages. It was all save percentage and shooting percentage at even strength. I mean, Pavelski was shooting at 5% through the first.
And he's not a 5% shooter. No, he's probably around a 9 or 10% shooter.
Yeah, most quality forwards are, you know, 10% or higher. Most defensemen are 5%, right? So all that stuff sort of bounced back in the second half. Niemi went into the net. He's a starter, and suddenly he's a 930 even strength save percentage. And then their shots started going in, so they looked like a better team, right?
Yeah. So with the Sharks, I noticed that Nidamaki has obviously gotten less and less as the season's progressed. Is that just based on percentages that, you know, once it was kind of just coincidental that when he came out of the net, the Sharks started to perform well, or is he actually the reason the Sharks were doing so poorly in the first half?
They were actually switching off in the first half a lot.
Like, okay.
I think he was going with a hot hand, and then Nidamaki got hurt. Okay. So Niemi had to go in net, and he just turned out to get hot. Now, I don't know if he's going to be an elite goaltender forever. They're going to hope so because they just signed him. Right now, he's stopping a lot of pucks, so yeah, that's good.
So we move on to our next series. Detroit, number 3 seed against Phoenix, and this is probably just as much of a mismatch as the San Jose-LA series is. And, I mean, Detroit is obviously, when healthy, they are pretty old, but when healthy, they're one of, if not the best teams in the league. And Phoenix just doesn't have that offensive depth that they need, right? I mean, like, Keith Yandel this year has kind of come out of nowhere to become this tough minutes guy on the blue line. And, you know, losing Mahalik last year, or I guess in free agency, a lot of people were saying, you know, that the problem with the Coyotes was going to be the blue line. But as the season's progressed, there's nothing past their top six, even maybe their top like four.
Yeah, it's their depth is questionable. I mean, you have to hand it to that organization for doing as well as they do, considering the circumstances they play under. So, I mean, last year, it was funny, they had Lang and Lombardi as centermen, and they were ultra-protected. But, you know, they scored in those situations. And they had Hanzel as the third-line guy, and he was doing all the heavy lifting. This year, they had Hanzel doing sort of both, because they didn't really replace Lombardi or Lang. So, I mean, he didn't score a whole lot. His numbers improved a bit, but he also wasn't shutting anyone down as much. That sort of fell to really bottom-end guys like Taylor Pyatt and Vernon Fiddler, and I mean that's a tough gig for for players like that. So I mean they're still good enough to compete every night, and they have Briz Galoff, who is definitely the best goalie in that series, and he's the type of guy, you know, every year there's a goalie who steals a first round series. That could happen, but yeah, I would bet on Detroit.
Yeah. So you mentioned the goaltenders, and obviously the biggest weakness with the Detroit Red Wings is the goaltending situation. I'm not sure if Howard's back from his injury or not, but
yeah, he is. Yeah.
Even still, he's not. I don't think anybody would consider him even a maybe good goaltender. He's being buoyed by his defense led by Nicholas Lidstrom, who at 41 is still one of the best defensemen in the entire league. And then you have Zetterberg and Datsyuk, two of the best centermen in the entire league, right? Yeah. So, and we saw it in the game where St. Louis put up 10. If Howard goes down at all, like if for whatever reason he can't perform, then the Red Wings are screwed.
Yeah, they have nothing. They have Joey McDonald, the 31-year-old. You know, tweener.
Yeah.
And they have Chris Osgood, who's been terrible for years.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, but somehow he got 400 wins, and some people say, you know, maybe he's a Hall of Famer. People are idiots, but.
No. Wins as for goalies is the stupidest statistic in hockey.
Yeah. So I'm going to go Detroit probably in six. I like the fact that Phoenix, you know, is able to even make it to the playoffs with the constraints that they have.
Mm.
And so I'll give them a couple games because of that, but
yeah,
I just don't see him winning the series.
No, I'll say Detroit in seven just because Briz Galoff is that good.
Yeah. So far we've picked chalk, but we'll move on to the 4-5 seed matchup in the West, Anaheim against Nashville. And Anaheim obviously riding a bit of a hot hand with Solani and
Corey Perry, yeah.
Exactly, making it into the playoffs. And I mean, for a while there, the fact that they were even getting into the playoffs was surprising. Now that they're at the number 4 seed is even more so.
Very,
I mean,
surprising, yeah.
Like Solani's 40 years old and he put up 75 points this season. Like, how many people can do that, right? Yeah. So, I'm not sure about Nashville. I haven't really watched them much this year past the games that they play with the Flames.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do know that Rene is a excellent goaltender, and that'll take him pretty far. And, you know, you got guys like Shea Weber and Ryan Suter as their top defensive pairing, and those two are
they're excellent,
just as good as anybody, any top defensive pairing in the league, except for maybe Seabrook and Keith.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm not totally sure past, like, Patrick Hornqvist. On the
rough up front, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like past him, I'm not sure if they even have any talent.
No, they just have marginal talent. I mean, they got Mike Fisher, who is a 40-point centerman. I mean, he can score sometimes, and sometimes he won't. They have some good shutdown players, Joel Ward. I believe Legwand gets the really heavy minutes because Trotz likes to shelter people as much as possible and, on the other hand, bury other guys. So and that's how he gets along, of course. So Anaheim, I'm conflicted on Anaheim. They have a fantastic top end. Getzlaff, Perry, Ryan. I mean, that's as good a line as you can get. And Lubomir Visnovsky had one of the best seasons of his career. He's been outstanding this year.
Yeah, people have mentioned him in the conversation for the Norris, or at least, you know, non-mainstream media people.
I think deservedly so. I mean, and then you have Solani, who is apparently ageless, but beyond the top end in Anaheim, it is a steep, steep fall off. Their underlying numbers are terrible just because everyone else on Anaheim gets destroyed when they're on the ice. So it's the type of thing where if their top players come out and beat up Nashville, they'll win the series. But if Nashville can suppress the top end enough, their depth will win out. So we'll see.
So I'm going to say Nashville in seven. And, I mean, Nashville's obviously had some troubles getting past the first round. Mm-hmm.
It'd be good for the franchise if they could get past the first round.
Exactly.
Too.
So just based on the way these teams are matched up, I think it will go seven games, and I think Nashville will prevail eventually.
I'm going to say if Hiller gets back in net and is healthy, I think Anaheim will win because he is a legitimately excellent goalie as well.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, I don't have that much faith in Dan Ellison carrying that team too far. So I'll say Nashville in seven. If Ellis is in net, Anaheim in seven if it's Hiller.
So we'll move on to the East now. In New York, Washington. Washington, the 1 seed. New York, the 8 seed. I'm going to pick Washington in five. Just start off with that. Just because Washington's top-tier talent is ridiculous. Like, Backstrom and Ovechkin are two of the probably top 5 forwards in the entire league. And, you know, with Mike Green coming back, hopefully, I guess, for the Capitals. And, you know, Jeff Schultz maybe rode the percentages a little bit last year, but he's still pretty good at his shutdown role. And, I mean, New York now with, is it Callahan?
Callahan's out, yeah.
With the broken ankle. And if Gabrick can be suppressed, then really the only guy they have left is
Dubinsky.
Yes, so Dubinsky. And then past that, there's nothing.
There's nothing, yeah. I don't have any faith in New York beyond, you know, Henrik Lundqvist is a very, very good goalie.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there's nothing in New York. All their underlying numbers are pretty poor. You know, Chris Drury making $7 million a year. He's fallen off a cliff recently.
Yeah.
They have Brian Boyle playing a not insignificant role, and he's been a fourth liner the rest of his career. So, I mean, the only thing that reason I'd watch that series is Brandon Prust, who has had a very good season quietly. Flames fans probably don't want to hear that, right? But they put him in a shutdown role, sort of. I don't think he consistently played against the top six players, but he had a really terrible zone start, and he had, you know, good underlying numbers.
And probably had a better season than Kotalik out of, I mean.
Who didn't?
Yeah, it's a very good point.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Washington 5. I just kind of want to see that one game so Torts can have his blow-up press conference. His annual
blow-up. Abuse Brooksy, yeah.
Exactly, so I can laugh at that. But yeah, Washington in 5.
I'm going to say Washington in 4.
Oh, picking the sweep.
Yeah.
Risque. next series, number 2, Philly, and the number 7 seed, Buffalo. Philly, I don't have any confidence in their goaltending whatsoever.
And they've been terrible, like, the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, not just percentages terrible, like, really, actually terrible.
I think the stat that I read last week was 14 of the last 19 games they've lost.
Yeah.
And I mean, 5 of those were in the shootout, but still, even fucking, that's not the way you want to go into the playoffs.
Everything is cratered for them. Like, their shot differential is cratered. And I know Chris Pronger's hurt, but I mean, the entire team can't be built around merely Chris Pronger. He's been a great player his career, but he's
35.
I think he's 36 now.
He's old as fuck, is the point, right?
36-year-old defenseman. I mean, we'll take Detroit, for instance. If you took out Lidstrom, it would leave a hole. He's a great player, but that team wouldn't take a nosedive because they're better than that. So if Philadelphia is really hanging on the health of Chris Pronger, they're not as good as we think they are, right?
So they do have Mike Richards, and he does excel pretty much in tough minutes situations.
Yep.
Does Carter get kind of softer minutes, or is he more of a toughness guy as well?
I think he sees top six opposition as well. I mean, you can only some coaches bury guys the way, say, Vigneault did with Malhotra this year. So I think they switch off a little bit. I mean, Philadelphia does have good depth. They have, you know, Briere getting soft minutes whenever he can. Zhirdev, who is much maligned this year, but actually has great underlying numbers if people bother to take a look.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with that guy in the dressing room because everyone seems to hate him, but on the ice, he's an effective player. Billy Lino, who is okay in his bottom six role. Yeah, I mean, they have enough depth up front, actually, on the back to do damage, that they just have to figure it out. I don't know what's happened to him recently. But
what about Giroux?
And great player.
And the underlying numbers back that up?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I read everything about him, and, you know, I've never really actually looked at the underlying stats for Philly, and I kind of just assumed that maybe he was getting the softer minutes, but if you say so, then it's true, I guess.
Well, now I'll have to go check when I go home.
Okay. And the thing with Buffalo, past Ryan Miller, Jordan Leopold's been good for them this year, but I don't really think of Jordan Leopold as a top two shutdown guy when I think of people in the NHL. And I have no idea what Buffalo's forward situation even looks like.
It's... I mean, Derek Roy is a legitimately good player. Pominville is actually a guy they bury sometimes. He does tough top six stuff. He doesn't grossly outscore, but he's capable enough. Vanek is, you know, a sniper. He's good. He's not worth his contract. Thank you, Kevin Lowe, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Myers, I think, is a legitimately good player on the back end, although he's pretty young. After that, yeah. And even Ryan Miller, he's been good this year, but not the Vezina player he was last year.
Yeah. So as worried I am about Philadelphia's health in terms of, you know, their goaltending throughout the entire playoffs, I'm still going to go with them in 6.
Yeah.
Just because I don't really have any faith in Buffalo past Miller.
Yeah. I mean, if Philadelphia should win the series, I'll say Philadelphia in 7. But if Buffalo wins, considering the way Philadelphia's performed recently, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. We'll move on to the next series. Number 3 seed Boston against number 6 seed Montreal. And Boston, Tim Thomas obviously having a historically great season.
Oh, ridiculous.
One of, if not the best save percentages of all time, I think, besting Hasek. So, I mean, and they got Thomas Cabrelle from the Leafs, and I think he's playing third. Like, is he on the top pairing with Char, or is he getting the 3-4 pairing?
I haven't watched enough to tell you.
So they obviously have some pretty ridiculous depth on the on the blue line, and then having a guy like Patrice Bergeron up front, being able to shut down people is invaluable.
Yeah, people probably don't realize how good he is. He's like Ryan Kessler good.
Yeah.
He's a Selke candidate. So, and, you know, they got David Krejci, who can soak up soft minutes. I think he got 60-odd points this year. And Nathan Horton, who's is probably not as good as people thought he was when he was picked, but is still a capable enough player. Lucic has sort of come into his own a bit this year. I was pretty dubious when he signed his contract. It seemed more reputation-based than anything. I think he'd scored 40 points up until that point, but he's definitely scoring a bit more this year. So, I mean, the funny thing with Montreal is they had terrible underlying numbers last year. They certainly shouldn't have beaten Washington in the first round.
Yeah.
They caught lightning in a bottle. The underlying numbers are much better this year, and I think I'm really looking forward to some number cruncher in the summer looking at that and going, what the hell happened? Because the team didn't change that much. They didn't change coaches.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that Wisniewski came in. And other than that, not really anything.
He's not, you know.
Exactly. And like he's a power play guy. Like, that's what he does, right?
Yeah.
And like in terms of the top 12 forwards, like,
maybe they're just switching up deployment. Maybe they switched up systems. And I'm not a big systems guy. I'm not someone who thinks that they're this magical elixir that make, you know, great teams terrible and terrible teams great. But without really looking into it, I have no idea what changed.
So,
but something did.
It's very interesting to look at the two teams, or the team from this year and the team from last year. And I'm going to pick Boston just because they do have Tim Thomas. And I mean, Camilleri obviously is quite talented, and he was leading the playoffs in points when they went out.
In goals, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to go Boston in six.
Yeah, I'm going to say Montreal just to...
Really?
Yeah, go against the grain. I think, you know, Carey Price has had a good season. He's a pretty good goalie. Part of me thinks that at some point, Thomas has to come back down to earth, because I think he's sporting a 941 save percentage at even strength, and that is just ridiculous. And maybe he's reincarnation of Hasek, maybe he's an alien, but I half expect at some point just the bomb to fall right out of Thomas. So.
And there was an article in Behind the Net, I think maybe 2 or 3 months ago, that talked about Thomas and what his true talent numbers are. And last season, he didn't really have a good season. But the season before, when he had a full, healthy season,
it was still very good.
It was like a 934 or something.
Yeah, he deserved the Vezina when he won it.
So, I mean, I'm not sure what his true talent really is, just based on his age, injuries, maybe aberrations and defense and the people in front of him. But for whatever reason, I just feel like Thomas will probably last at least a series.
Yeah, I have no problem saying he's probably an elite goalie. I just don't think his true talent is 941, because I don't think anyone's true talent is 941 in the NHL right now. So,
and if it was, he would have been in the league a little bit earlier.
So I guess we'll see.
So the last series, number 4 Pittsburgh against number 5 Tampa Bay, and I mean, what a job Dan Bylsma has done with the Penguins.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, like Crosby and Malkin, two of the top 10 forwards in the entire league, and Crosby probably inarguably number one.
Yeah.
For them to go down for half the season, like I think between them they played 85 games.
Mm-hmm.
And still finish number 4 with over 100 points is absolutely ridiculous.
And their outshooting numbers are still great.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And it's not just two great players being out. It's a huge chunk of your cap space being out, right? I forget what they're both being paid, but it must be.
I think their cap space is 8.7 for both of them.
Yeah, so, you know.
Cap hits, sorry.
Almost $17 million out of the lineup. Most teams are just going to sink that. But, I mean, they have some unheralded players up front. Tyler Kennedy is like their David Moss. I mean, Bylsma will probably win Jack Adams this year, and he probably deserves it.
I do like Tyler Kennedy as a player. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, for whatever reason, the first time I saw him, I guess maybe it was his speed the first time I saw him, but you know, seeing him progress into this player, like you say, like a David Moss type, I'm really endeared to his style of play, and I would love to see him in a Flames jersey someday.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah,
I think Tampa Bay might have gotten sunk a little bit this year just based on their goaltending their first half with Ellis and Mike Smith.
Yeah, they had some of the worst. I mean, they were worse than some people's PK save percentage through the first 30 games, I think. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, even those two guys aren't that bad. So, yeah, they got jobbed through the first little bit there.
And I think even their actual goal differential was negative until they traded for Rolls. And
they were still
and they were still holding that playoff spot. I mean, they obviously have some talent up front with Stamkos and St. Louis, and to a lesser extent, Le Cavalier, who has one of the worst contracts in the entire league.
It's awful.
But I think eventually not having Crosby, not having Malkin is going to catch up to Pittsburgh.
You'd think so. I mean, it just hasn't yet. That's a funny thing. Both of these teams have pretty good outshooting numbers. The thing with Tampa Bay is they have a great power play. It's really, really good because of Stamkos, and St. Louis is still a world-class player, especially on the power play. I guess if Pittsburgh starts taking too many penalties, that's where it can probably get away from them. But I still expect them to win, to tell you the truth, even if Crosby doesn't come back.
I was talking to Eric about a week ago, and we were talking about Stanley Cup picks and, you know, who he expected to come out of the East and West. And for some reason, I just felt Tampa Bay was going to be able to make it to at least the conference final. I don't know what it was.
And, well, that wouldn't surprise me either, actually.
But now that I've looked more at the series, and you see how big of a player Crystal Tang is for the Penguins, and, you know, how Fleury's performed since that terrible start. I think he was like 1-6 to start the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dwayne Morrison's 41 years old.
Yeah,
like I don't know how long he's going to be able to keep that team afloat in terms of, you know, being able to actually stop the puck. But then the thing that gives me pause when I say that is that they were able to still maintain a playoff position the entire season with Mike Smith and Dan Ellis, right? So I'm going to say Tampa Bay in 7, but very reluctantly.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, the funny thing about Roleson is I think he has a better save percentage than Kiprusoff this year. Right? So
that's depressing.
So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Tampa Bay. I really like what Yzerman did this year. All of his decisions were really good bets. I mean, Simone Gagné didn't apparently work out that well, but I think I spoke about that Hockey Prospectus article earlier. It was the luckiest, and I did a companion piece, unluckiest players of the year. Gagné was there. I mean, his personal shooting percentage was terrible, and I think his PDO was 94 or something for most of the year, which is just absolutely abysmal.
And I'm pretty sure he was hurt for probably at least 20
games.
He's
always hurt.
Yeah, with a neck injury. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure he still got like around 16 goals. So while that's obviously not good for somebody making $5 million, it's still...
He's better than his numbers indicate, basically.
Exactly. So, that's good. I guess that's our little playoff preview there for the first round. And since the Flames have no games anymore for the rest of the season, I guess we'll just move on to shout-outs. And do you have anything to shout-out this week?
Can't think of anything.
So... Chemi and Ryan Lambert are auctioning off their writing talents to a fan or whoever pays the most money, donates the most money to a charity called Right to Play. So there's a bit of a competition going on right now between Pension Plan Puppets, who are the Leafs SBN site, and Nux Misconduct, who are the Canucks SBN site.
Right.
If you want to go maybe donate more than the $800 that have already been put up
I
there
think
right
it's
now.
It's a two-horse race at this point.
So, but good for them. And if you want to go take a look at the eBay auction, I'm pretty sure you can just go to Lambert's Twitter at Two Line Pass, and it's all over there. I don't have the exact link in front of me.
And there's some links on, I think we posted one actually on flamesnation.ca as well. So
yeah, go check that out and go read the two threads on Nux Misconduct and PPP, and they're pretty humorous. Aside from that, I don't have anything else. So that'll be it for this week. Kent's on Twitter at Kent_Wilson. I'm on Twitter at AzevedoJ. Everybody have a good one, and we'll talk to you next week.